Grassy Narrows is celebrating an important date today, the 20th anniversary of their logging blockade that turned away timber companies and sought to end resource extraction in their homelands. Leading up to this date, the CBC's Logan Turner spoke to a number of key people involved in the blockade. I talked to him earlier.
Hey, Jonathan.
Okay, so tell me more about this blockade.
For sure. So let's start with the context. What was happening in the years leading up to this action? I spoke to Melissa Bunding and her mom, Barbara Phobister, the women who have both been involved in this blockade from the very beginning. So you're going to hear them speak one after another here.
Yeah, as far back as I remember, probably around 95, when I started hearing stuff about it, about the clear cuts and the logging and how they were using the back road to access different parts of our land, and people were going out to their trap lines and only to find that they were gone. And so people were getting angry and upset, started feeling they were violating our rights.
I think one of the things I remember is my uncle, he's gone now. His name was Moses Land. He talked about now, he said, I went to the place where I usually pick our medicines. He said, I couldn't find it. He said, it's all clear cut. There's nothing left. He said, been going there for years, to pick a certain medicine. He said it was totally gone. There's nothing left of it.
So, Logan, what actually led to the beginning of the blockade in 2002?
Right. So that was kind of the context, leading up to the early 2000s. But what was actually that catalyst? Well, it was actually a bit of a spontaneous event. Chrissy Isaacs told me about one late night drive with her sister.
While we were talking, driving around, talking about our kids, how they might miss out on being able to hunt and pick berries and to have that knowledge of the land. And as we're talking about that, a big logging truck went by. And then I remember saying, we have to stop that. And she said, okay, let's do it. And so me and her went out with an anonymous person and we put the logs over the road.
So that was Chrissy Isaacs, but I also spoke to Judy De Silva, who has served as a spokesperson for the community since the blockade began. And she remembers a few additional details that are interesting, I think, for people to hear.
Three young people, they went in the forest and they tried to cut trees down to block the road. And they said the first one went backwards, so it didn't go on the road. The second one went halfway on the road, but then their car broke down. Their way in the forest is in the end of November, very cold, and then their car broke down. So their dad had to go help them, Robert Williamson. It was 6 hours later, and it was towards, nighttime, and he went and found them and he helped them. So that was kind of when Robert Williamson heard this, this is his two daughters. He said, we're starting now.
And Jonathan, right after that, it was actually that very same day, Judy said that he turned away the very first truck.
So what did the blockade look like at the time?
So there was the site itself. There was a sacred fire at the time. But then over the course of days and weeks, buildings and structures, temporary at first, started going up. Young people would lay across the road, turn the trucks around. But there were some other actions going on as well over the course of those months and then what turned into years. Here's a story from Barbara Phobister again.
So it was snowing and the road was covered. It was just pure you couldn't even see the road. It was just covered in snow. And then while we were driving, we'll go to the campsite. And we had a letter ready. And so we started driving. And all of a sudden, we saw a single track right in the middle of the road. And we said, what is that? Who's running on the road? And we kept driving. And finally, we caught up to this big white wolf. It was running right in the middle of the road. And he kept running and running till we got close to the campsite. And we were all excited because we said, oh, we're doing the right thing. This wolf is, leading us. And yeah, and so it gave us a little bit of strength, to do what we had to do. Because we were kind of scared, women. And anyways, we knocked on the trailer and my sister, Roberta, is the one who handed the letter. But when we looked into the trailer, the camps were all set up comfortably. They had generators, they had satellite dishes. And when they opened the door, the loggers were all sitting there watching hockey, and they were all in their long johns. So it kind of like, you know, it kind of eased the fear in us. Like it kind of was a comical sight. And anyways, we served them our eviction notice, and all our eviction notices were signed with an X, just like how the treaties were signed. And we handed them the notice, and we said, you know, we expect, you know, for you to vacate by tomorrow, like in 24 hours. And sometimes it was scary, but they did, when we did check like 24 hours later, the whole place was like clear. They vacated everything.
I just want to add, Jonathan, what that actually looked like from the other side, you know, all of this work that was happening. Melissa Bunding, I mentioned earlier, she's Barbara's daughter. She was on the call with me when I was talking to Barbara, and she told me kind of what this scene kind of played out like and looked like in their house.
I said I had a little baby at home, so I wasn't out there with them, but I do remember her sometimes getting phone calls, and she'd be like, oh my gosh, really? And okay, I'll be there, I gotta go. And she would just jump up and leave and head out to the actions every time they had something planned, and she would just get up and go.
And this blockade is still going on, right?
It is, and people in Grassy say there's still an urgent need for this blockade to protect the area from resource extraction. Last year, we at CBC, we actually reported that Grassy has taken Ontario to court for granting 9 permits for mineral exploration in their lands without consultation. And then today, during a celebration, Judy De Silva said this work is so urgent today because now they're facing the possibility that nuclear waste gets stored in the Treaty 3 area, something she says that the community is opposed to. So the same concerns, again, echoed today when I spoke with newly elected Grassy Narrows Chief Rudy Turtle.
Industry hasn't stopped. We have, you know, our forest continues to go back to its natural state, and industry and other people want to come in and take our trees, so the battle never stops, basically.
So again, at that community celebration today, this very much was the key message. It's an important celebration of 20 years today, but people in the community saying this is just the beginning. They have a lot of work to do in the next 20.
Thanks so much for this, Logan.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
That was CBC Thunder Bay's Logan Turner.